Welcome to the Reese Class Subbrief. The Reese Class submarine is built by Turkey. This is their first indigenous air independent propulsion submarine that they've built, and they plan on building six of these to start. Right now there's one in sea trials, the second one has launched, the other four are under construction right now, so they will reach their goal of six. And I would not be surprised if this class of submarine continues for additional hulls. They may even begin exporting these because it appears to be a very good design. This is based on the German Type 214TN design. That was the original name of this, but Turkey has renamed their class the Reese class, even though it is essentially the same submarine. So this is the first submarine that they have that shoots the heavyweight torpedoes. They can shoot the German DM2A4. They can also shoot the Mark 48 because they are a NATO member and they have the right equipment for that. And the American encapsulated Harpoon, which is the submerged version of the Harpoon launcher. They have a Turkish version of the Harpoon that you'll see in this lecture as well. And the last one is expected to join the fleet in 2028, where they will have six of these. So this is going to be the mainstay of the Turkey's submarine force. All right, so let's start by looking at the sensors and countermeasures in the sail. We have the Ares ESM. We have one periscope and one optotronic scope. And forward to that, we have the LPI, low probability of intercept, radar. On the bow, we have a sonar system by Atlas Electronic. That is a German ISUS 9072 and can do active sonar and passive sonar, of course, as well. Okay, the Ultra Electronic C-Crypsis is a anti-torpedo countermeasure that's both static and mobile. And then it's all powered by two MTU diesel engines. The weapon systems, like I said, are the Harpoon 2, Block 2, encapsulated submarine version, and heavyweight torpedoes, like the German DM2A4, the Turkey's version of that same torpedo called the Akya, or the Mark 48, which is what I believe they're shooting right now until they get the Akya up and going. This is what the inside looks like. Here you can see all the different systems. They have the bow accommodation is where the crew sleeps on diesel boats. Just after that is the command and control room. And then you have a lot of fuel cells and electronics after that. And of course, at the very end, you have the diesel generator with the Permisen motor, which is the motor that will take the energy from these AIP engines and turns the screw. Here we have a little bit of a lower resolution screen grab from the Turkish industrial shipyard. It's a little more detailed, but basically the same thing. You can see basically where they keep the all the fuel, the hydrogen and the LOX is on the keel. And so all that storage is down below the deck of where everybody's living and working. And you can see up in the front there in the bow, they have a large torpedo room with torpedo tubes and the torpedoes themselves right behind that. And right behind that are the bunks. And so as they shoot, or if they don't have a full load of torpedoes, they can move more and more people up forward if they need to. Anytime you're on a submarine, you're going to have limited berthing, right? But especially on diesel boats. So I'm sure they make full use of any space that they may have in the torpedo room, despite what the picture shows here. And just behind that is the CIC again, and behind that is the large engine room. It has both a diesel generator and these air-independent motors that we're going to go into here shortly. All right, here are the names and construction dates of the six submarines that they're building right now. Like I said, one is in sea trials at the time of this recording. One was just launched. 25th of May, that's a few weeks before this recording was done, and the rest are under construction right now. And that's where they are in Turkey. They're being made right there. I'm not very good at saying these Turkey cities' names, but this gives you an idea. It's just east of Istanbul, okay? It's on the Sea of Marmara side, outside the Black Sea, so they don't have to go through the straits there. They're just in the Sea of Marmara. This is a great photo, by the way, by our defense industry journalist, Tayfun Özbek. You can see the finished submarine in the floating dry dock there. It's getting ready to be floated and then towed or tugged out of that floating dry dock there. Very good photos. All right, so the Reese class by the numbers. She is 68 meters long. little bit more than 6 meters of beam and drafts about the same 6 meters. Displacement is 1,800 tons on the surface. Dived is 2,000 tons. Whenever we speak of these submarines, we always go with the dived tonnage. Top speed is 20 knots, five-bladed screw, 12 knots on the surface. When she's on air-independent propulsion, which means she's essentially silent and submerged, she only does 8 knots. She has two marine diesels. Those are the MTU-16Vs, 396s, very popular. They're on just about every European and some most Asian submarines and ships as well. This is a extremely reliable and popular marine diesel. And she has the one Siemens Permacin motor, one shaft turning that five-bladed screw, and two PEM AIP fuel cells. I called them engines earlier. They're technically fuel cells. So whenever you speak of AIP, think fuel cell. All right. So she has 8 torpedo tubes, the encapsulated harpoon or the Atmica anti-ship missile. That's basically the Turkey version of the harpoon, can be shot out of that. It's literally in a canister. It's like this silver. It looks like it's stainless steel, but it's probably like aluminum canister that you just throw in the torpedo tube. You connect a little umbilical to the rear end of it so you can program the targeting stuff while it's in the tube if you need to change anything. And then you just literally eject the entire aluminum tube out. And the thing is weighted so that it becomes vertical once it leaves the submarine and floats up to the surface. And then there's a little sensor on the nose of the capsule, this aluminum capsule that's submerged. But it detects whenever it's at the surface, and then it blows open the top of it, and the missile ignites and just pushes itself out of the aluminum thing. And then the aluminum canister scuttles itself. It just goes down to the bottom. That's kind of how the harpoon works on submarine launches, this version of the harpoon. Okay, the Mark 48, they can use that, or the German DM2A4, or, like I said, they have the AKYA, Akya, Turkish heavyweight torpedo coming online. And this submarine will shoot it. They have the Atlas Electronica ISUS 9072 fire control system. They have the Ares 2NC and 2N, that's wideband, narrowband, ESM. We're going to go over all these in detail, so don't get too overwhelmed by this. They have the Talos Phoenix D, low probability of intercept radar. I'm going to kind of describe how that works. The Atlas Electronica sonar suite can do everything from active sonar, passive sonar, tracking multiple contacts, including giving you solutions like speed and range and stuff like that. They have little cursors that the sonar system itself does what the fire control system was designed to do. So you have multiple sources of range and speed calculation. They have a periscope and an optotronic scope. Optotronic scope is basically a camera you put up to the surface, and it can do like a quick search, and you just watch the screen. The periscope, we'll go into detail on this, but it has both. You can look through the view finder. It penetrates the pressure hull, which is what makes it a periscope and not an optotronic scope. But it also has a television mode as well. They have the torpedo countermeasure system. This is highly sensitive, but we do have a few details to share with you today. And of course, SATCOM and Link 11. Link 11 basically is target data sharing with NATO platforms. All right, here's that MTU, very popular diesel engine. Beautiful picture of it from the manufacturer's website here. Runs at 1,800 RPM, generates 1,580 kilowatts. I got two of these. The fuel cell AIP system generates 34 kilowatts, provides 8 knots of speed alone, supplemented lead acid batteries for higher speeds. And that's a great picture of it too. So what that is doing is combining hydrogen on one side and LOX, you know, LO, on the other side, combining them together and getting a chemical reaction that they then turn into electricity. It's a very clever, you know, chemistry to electricity device. All right, here's the ISUS 9072 combat management system. It integrates basically everything, periscope, sonar, all of it are on these displays here. So it's this is a family-specific variant. In other words, they built this version of the ISUS for the Reese. Multifunction displays can track 8 contacts. This is the unclassified version of this lecture, so take these numbers for what you will. Automatic threat and combatability analysts, which means whenever they detect something, if it's ESM, they can tell if it's a, you know, what kind of radar it is, you know, what kind of electricity is hitting the hitting the sensor, or on the sonar side, they can calculate, like I said, speed and range. They have these little cursors that they can bring up, and it will do some automatically calculations for them. And then the fire control system does its own calculation and then saves the history of all this data. So you can go to one contact after you've had it for 5 or 10 minutes and see what it's done over the past 10 minutes. Has it ever, you know, transmitted sonar, radar? What's its classification? While that is still done by the sonarman, it will recommend a classification. In terms of, like, is it biologics or is it a surface ship, man-made, whatever. A very, very general classification. Anyway, but it's a very good system, and they got it on the Reese. All right, here's the Sphinx D LPI radar developed by Talos Deutschland Tactical Radar. It's a 4-kilowatt frequency-modulated continuous wave pulse radar. And when our research brought this up, I thought it was misinformation. I was like, there's no way, because those are opposing descriptions. You know, a formula, a frequency modulation and continuous wave is not a pulse. But I know how they did this now. I kind of figured it out. So I'm gonna show you on the little whiteboard here as to how I think this works. So we're going to draw a little graph here. We have two axes. We have frequency. So we're going to go with FRQ. This is frequency, and this is going to be time down here on the bottom. And again, this is just my opinion. All right, so frequency modulation over time is basically a continuous frequency change over time like this. And the way that this works is they can broadcast the same frequency all the way around or on the same bearing if they want to, and they'll get the range by when the return comes. Is it, say, this frequency here, or is it this frequency here? Because you understand these are two different frequencies now, even though they're coming from the same source. So this is frequency modulation, change in frequency, continuous wave, continually being transmitted. Okay, now if you do this, you're going to be detected. So how is it low probability of intercept? Well, that's where the pulse part of this comes in. So what they do is they take this theory, okay, so they're not actually doing that, and they break it up into these little tiny micro pulses. And each one of these is very hard to detect. Trying to draw this in a straight line, I'm failing miserably. So there you go. And so if they get a return here or a return here, they still get the same information with a lot less chance of being detected. Each one of these pulses are in the microseconds, very short pulse widths. So that's how I believe how that works. Again, just my opinion, but I think I'm right. All right, so that's the LPI, low probability intercept radar. Let's go to the periscope. This is the one that does penetrate the pressure hull, manufactured by Hensoldt, fully integrated with submarine's combat management system, which means they can look at a target, hit a button on the periscope, and it sends the bearing and range information directly to the combat management system that then puts it into what's called a solution. And that is the data the weapon needs to hit it. So they can literally look at a contact, hit a button, send it to the fire control system that sends it to the torpedo. Torpedo is launched, hits the target. It's very, very fast and efficient. They have both a direct viewfinder, where you old school looking through the glass, or you can do the HDTV version, and it has an iSafe laser. So you can trigger the laser for getting laser ranges while looking through the glass, and you won't blind yourself accidentally. The TV has a 1920 by 1080 resolution and has an elevation of plus 70, but if it's infrared, it's only plus 40 and a range greater than 10,000 meters. I mean, you can see to the horizon, right? That's all you need to know about that. Pretty good system. Here's the OMS-100 Optotronics. They have a series of these OMS masts. This is one of the lower-end ones, but this is what they went with. Built by Hensoldt. It does have a quick look around where you can just pop this thing up. It's essentially a TV camera, and then it does a 360 and then pops back down. And then you look at your monitor and you can see all the way around, you know, on your monitor. It's good for a really good quick look and a low probability of detection because it's up and down so fast. It has a thermal camera, a high definition color TV, and an iSafe laser rangefinder. All right, so ESM, this one's kind of funny because really sensitive information here, but this is what they're putting out publicly. So we're going to go ahead and include it in the lecture here, but I really doubt that they gave us all the information for this ESM. So this is the Ares 2 family. It works in the 2 to 18 gigahertz range. So that's, this is a passive system. This is what it's looking for, okay? So the frequency accuracy is within, you know, less than 3 megahertz RMS, 360 degree coverage. It's been in service since 2015 on the Type 209s. They've also included these on Pakistan's Augusta 90 Bravo submarines. And so it has a narrowband and a wideband digital receiver. And the easiest way to explain that is to go back to my little drawing here. Let's pull this over. So a wideband receiver would be detecting the red line, you know, something that's more than 1 hertz wide over time, right? So that's why you want the wideband digital receiver. The narrowband digital receiver would be required to get this little green line, all these little short pulses. That's what your narrowband receiver is more likely to detect. So that's why you have both of those. There's more reasons as well, but it's all sensitive. All right, here's the Sea Crypsis. This is the torpedo defense system. This thing is really advanced. I wrote an article for the Warzone magazine a few years ago on this. Surprised I didn't get in trouble for that, actually. But this thing is, it's both active and passive. It's also static and mobile. Okay, so this thing can literally lure torpedoes away from you instead of just confusing them like decoys of the past. So it does both jamming and decoying. So, you know, and the difference is if you want to decoy something, that means you're luring the torpedo towards you, which is this, the decoy. And the idea is obviously if the torpedo's seduced by the decoy, it's not going to hit the submarine, right? But the problem is the weapon may go into reattack and then hit the submarine, okay? Because it's going to be very close to the submarine if it goes to the decoy, right? Because the decoy comes from the submarine. So another mode is called jamming, and that just basically confuses the hell out of the weapon so it doesn't know where it is, where it's going. It's just swimming blind, essentially. Modern torpedoes are very good at overcoming this. It's not dependable anymore, but just know that this does both modes. So advanced static mode, it's a mobile mode and does both active and passive countering. They have 24 or 48 decoy stores. This comes in modules of 24. So they either have one or two modules, and that's why you have 24 or 48 decoys. Very expensive. So probably not 48 on too many. Maybe Hull 1 gets 48 because it's special, but I don't think they're going to have 48 on all of them. All right, here's the Mark 48 Mod 6 AT Heavyweight Torpedo. This is America's torpedo right here. This thing's badass, right? Highly sensitive. So we won't go into any details here. Do know the numbers I'm about to give you are the public numbers. Take it with a grain of salt. One number that is absolutely true is 53 millimeters in diameter. 530 millimeters in diameter and 5.8 meters long. All right, public numbers, 55 knots, range of 38 kilometers. Oh, God. And depth of only 800 feet. So go below 800 feet, you'll be fine. I promise you. Anyway, okay, guidance is active, passive. It is wire guided and has multiple reattack profiles. And we won't go into what those are. And the warhead is 295 kilograms. So, you know, pretty big warhead. It'll blow a hole in your ship. It'll crack the keel of the ship, which is the whole point. You're not trying to blow the ship out of the water, you know, although that'd be kind of cool. The idea is you just break the support structure of any ship is called the keel, which is center line at the bottom of the ship. And then the weight of the superstructure tears the ship apart because it can't support its own weight. It's pretty effective. It works. It's a pump jet and uses auto fuel too. Seahake. Now, Seahake is a pretty scary little weapon. This weapon was built by the Germans. They worked with the Italians on this. The Italians have their own version of it. They call it something else. But anyway, so the Turkey can shoot the German version, which is the Seahake Mod 4 DM2A2, made by Atlas Electronica, in use since 2008. This thing is highly capable. It's fast. It's quiet. Yeah, a torpedo sneaking up on you. It can be launched from ships, submarines, shore-based platforms, which I have not seen that, but I guess if you stick a rocket motor on the back of this thing, you can drop it in the water with a parachute. It says high torpedo countermeasure capability, which means that decoy and jammer you just launched, it will identify that and swim right by it and then look for your submarine and sink it. Same public numbers as the Mark 48, 50 knots. I think Mark 48, they said, was 55, but this one's 50 knots, 50 kilometers max range, 53 6.3-centimeter torpedo, and a little bit longer at 6.2 meters in length. I believe, this is my opinion, if you look at the back, I'm going to put my cursor here on the screen. Do you see this module right here on the rear end of the torpedo? Do you know what that is? That is coils and coils, reams, a whole spool of fiber optic cable. And I believe that's why this, instead of being 5.5 meters, it's actually 6.2, is because they have this thing here that I believe, my opinion, and so this thing is going to be spooling out fiber optics. So that has much higher data bandwidth from the weapon back to the fire control system as it swims. Like, you could even do video if this thing had a camera, but you're shooting these things at depths that there's probably no sunlight. So, but they are probably getting a really good sonar picture from this weapon as if it's a mobile sonar device as it goes out and does its search. And because it's wire guided, as soon as they identify a decoy or a countermeasure, the operator with the back at the submarine can tell the torpedo, hey, that's a decoy. And the decoy, and the torpedo's probably saying, I know that. I told you there was a decoy, right? And they're gonna have this little argument. But there's a very smart weapon with high data rate capability, and they take full advantage of that fiber optic link. And the reason why that's special is up to, say, the 2000s, we always used copper wire, like your phone wire, yeah? Very low data rate compared to fiber optic. 250-kilogram blast warhead will do the job. And here's the Turkish version of it. I call it the Akya, but it may be literally A-K-Y-A. I think you may have to say each letter, but I'll call it Akya for short. Turkey's first indigenous torpedo. Well, first indigenous heavyweight torpedo. It does 45 knots max, 27 nautical mile range, 7 meters long. So, you know, not quite as efficient in size and weight as the German one, but it gets the job done. Does use the fiber optic self-guidance. Has a brushless DC electrical motor, counter-rotating propellers, and a high-energy chemical battery. So this does not use autofuel. This uses electricity, which means it's fast, quick to start up, and probably very quiet. That's something people don't think about. You see, you watch old World War II movies, and you hear this high-speed screech of torpedoes running underwater in the movies. And that's kind of true. That's kind of how they used to be. Not anymore, boys and girls. These things are quiet. Stealth technology doesn't just apply to aviation. They put a lot of it on submarine weapons so we can surprise the hell out of a fleet with a bunch of quiet torpedoes. Encapsulated harp, manufactured by Boeing Defense, IOC 1981. There's lots of versions of the harpoon. So 64 nautical miles is the public number on that. Warhead's 220 grams of kilograms, rather. And it is active radar homing with INS and GPS for the 84L. So the GPS is kind of cool. So you can actually give the weapon waypoints and say at this specific point, turn there. You can do that with INS, but with GPS, it's much more accurate. You can steer the weapon before it's launched. Now, you can't do that after it's launched. Once you launch this weapon, it's gonna execute the profile you told it. So it's not as modern as modern day missiles. Like Russia has missiles that they claim, we have to put that in front of everything Russia says it has, because we've learned recently, especially, it's a lot of baloney coming out of Russia. But Russia claims that they can maneuver their modern anti-ship missiles in flight. And then maybe they can, but that's what they claim. However, this old harpoon will not do that. You have to give it its profile before you launch it. Once you launch it, it's gone. All right, here's the Atmica anti-ship missile, basically the Turkey's version of the harpoon. It's 5.2 meters long. 1 meter of that is the booster that throws it up into the air and falls off a few seconds later. It has a 220 kilometer max range, so pretty good range. 220 kilogram high explosive fragmentation warhead. This warhead and the harpoon warhead, very similar in that they have metal filaments in the warhead itself that will expand with the explosion and shred. The idea is to shred lagging that's in the ship. Lagging is the insulation that keeps the ship, you know, either hot or cold, depending on the temperature you want, but it's literally insulation. And the idea is to shred that insulation and set it on fire so it burns everything else around it and let the fire destroy the ship. That's the purpose of these high explosive warheads with fragmentation effective penetration. It's a super sea skimming missile, has a Safran micro turbo TR-40 turbojet engine, which is indigenous. It also has a target attack and re-attack capability. So that's interesting. I would love to see the re-attack capability on this. and learn how that works, but I'm sure that's not publicly available. All right, final thoughts on the Reese class. This project is a milestone. Congratulations to the Turkish Navy and the country of Turkey for making their first, you know, domestically built AIP submarine. And this looks like it's got very capable systems on it. You know, we're often getting very loose with the definition of what's domestically built anymore, because as you can see, they have a lot of foreign systems on it, a lot of German systems. They have the American weapons available to them. But the point is, they're building all these in Turkey with Turkish workers at Turkish shipyards. And they're that once they hit that mark, they're like, yeah, this is a, you know, an indigenous submarine. And so as long as they can keep building them themselves, if, you know, if they didn't need Germany, I would think it'd be more indigenous, but they do meet the minimum of that definition. India is the same way. India will be like, hey, we're building all of our own stuff, even though it's designed by France, and, you know, all they do is put it together, basically. But that's how the indigenous thing works. Okay, first submarines at sea trials right now, time this recording. This recording is in 2023 for future viewers. The last submarine will enter the fleet in 2028. That means they're building or commissioning one a year. They are at peak production rate right now, so they can build one a year maximum. Submarines will be part of a coherent network-centric architecture. This is something that Turkey's doing that's very clever. They have a lot of autonomous vehicles, both air and seaborne, and so this will communicate with those autonomous vehicles via this network that's all around the coastline and on Turkey, even in the air. And it's kind of like the Aegis thing where they can share targeting information. I mentioned Link 11. Link 11 is the backbone of that, but they probably have their own Link 11 type network, is what I think they have to talk to all the drones that they have. Anyway, so long endurance undersea and high kill capacity. The air-independent propulsion, those fuel cells, can last a long time. It's not like the old days where they need to snorkel every 3 days. If they don't drain their fuel reserves, you know, going high speed for 3 days, they can stay submerged for a long period of time. It's all down to how much hydrogen and how much LOX do they have on board. And assuming they have a full complement, it's going to be, you know, a week or more before they have to come back up to the surface. They may have to come back to the surface to regenerate their air. In other words, get some fresh air in the boat before they have to refuel. That's how important this AIP is. They have all the benefits of a fast attack submarine with the exception of top speed. Okay. But they can stay submerged for long periods of time, which is the key benefit. And then they have the benefit of the diesel boat. Even though this is not a diesel boat, this AIP boat, but they have the benefit of old diesel boats in that they're extremely quiet. So they can stay submerged, high speed, long periods of time, and are nearly silent. And it's indigenous to Turkey. They can make their own. Yeah. Great stuff. Turkey's really coming along very well. I think that they, if I were to compare Turkey to India, because they have similar propaganda about their indigenous projects, Turkey's truly building capable ships and submarines and innovating designs, where India is struggling with that still. Even though they claim it, they have a lot more problems over there. So the Turkish defense industry has improved skills in building submarines and a program that's known as MIL-GEN, and that's military submarine or military projects that are domestic to the country. Submarines will enter service in 2030. We'll probably have to do another lecture on those. The second generation of this submarine is when it does eventually come out. We'll definitely feature it here on this channel. All right. So that's the Reese submarine. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it made sense to you. If you have any questions, just leave them in the Patreon comment section and I will answer every single one of you guys. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. Bye.